Welcome to Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Casey Phillips and Scott Smith here. We're still going to get to your Twitter questions later in the show. You can continue to send those in. Use that hashtag BucksLive. I already saw we have one about the Hall of Famers, which happened since our last show. And so I know we're going to be getting to that part later, but we always love welcoming any of your thoughts, comments, questions about the last game we had, the upcoming game against the Packers, anything on your mind, send it our way. To start off with, let's just go and dive into the Falcons game. And I think you have to start with Julio Jones. And
you think?
I think that seems like where we kind of have to start, unfortunately. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about what your thoughts were as you watched that unfold.
We're not the first team to give up 250 yards to Julio Jones. He's done that before.
That's true.
That doesn't make it any less frustrating. I certainly understand that was frustrating to watch. What I find interesting are the comments, like on Twitter, of why didn't the Bucs try to double-team him or why didn't they do that? Of course they tried to double-team him. Rolled coverage his way, stacked it. You know, Dirk Cutter says we tried 14 different coverages in that game.
Which is crazy.
It seems as if, in the description of it, that what we had there was two really, really, really good players in Matt Ryan and Julio Jones playing out of their minds and just playing better than us. And I think some of it had to do with Matt Ryan correctly diagnosing those coverages and throwing to and Julio Jones as well. Because sometimes when it's zone coverage, certain types of zones, you adjust your routes. You know, there's routes that are man beaters and routes that are better against zone, ways to beat zone. I mean, we had one where the cornerback slipped and fell down. It was just about anything that could possibly happen. And, you know, I don't know if that's any more or less frustrating that we tried so many things and none of them worked. Maybe it's more frustrating. But on that particular day, Julio Jones was better than we were.
Yeah, that's true. And I know we had Vernon Hargraves out already, which was obviously challenging when you know that it's a team that has a lot of really amazing weapons, particularly in the receiving core. And then just in general, injuries were everywhere going into the game, during the game. And you know, coaches will never use that. They'll say it's an excuse. They'll say that, you know, teams have injuries all the time. Mm-hmm. But obviously those are the people that start for a reason.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And I was going to say the same thing. You're absolutely right that Dirk Cutter, like every other head coach, has said up here, you know, up at the podium many, many times, that you can't use an excuse. It's next man up, and we're confident in the guy mm-hmm. who stands in there. But interestingly, this week on Monday after the game, he did say that injuries are going to be an issue this week. And that's not him saying using that as an excuse, but the fact that he made a point of saying that when you don't normally hear that a lot tells me that some of those injuries from that game are going to be ongoing at least for a little while, and that's going to be an issue this week. You know, there were at least seven guys. I can count seven who came out of that game with injuries. Some of them came back in, but not all of them. When you have seven guys, and plus you had four going into the week that were out, when you have all those injured, it almost makes it likely you're going to have to do some roster maneuvering. You have to have enough active, healthy players to play the next game. Right. So I don't know what they're going to be. They usually come on Tuesday or Wednesday, but I wouldn't be surprised if we have some roster moves simply out of necessity.
That's true. And what are some of the areas in particular that seem to be hard hit by injuries, and areas that maybe even especially looking at the Packers game, you'll know that these are holes that they might need to address more than others?
Well, it'll be interesting to find out. There were three offensive linemen that got hurt at some point in that game, Damar Dotson and Ali Marpet, and to a lesser extent, Kevin Pamphill. And so if any or combination of those two guys is out, you obviously are going to have some. Those are all three starters. You're going to have Joe Howley and Evan Smith and Caleb Benenack and Leonard West, or some combination of those guys getting involved. And really, that'll be the first time all year. It seems like we've had injury issues a lot this year, especially at a couple positions like defensive end and cornerback, but they've generally been like 2 or 3 week things. We haven't really had to put a lot of guys on injured reserve to this mm-hmm. point. And one of the spots that hasn't been hit hard at all is the offensive line. So that continuity is always nice, and particularly on the offensive line. Now, it hasn't led to very good results running the ball, but the Buccaneers have actually protected the passer pretty well, whichever one has been in there. They rank 7th in the league in sacks allowed per pass play, so the pass protection has been good. Now, if you have to mix up the lineup, will it be as good? I mean, hopefully, but it's definitely a concern against a team that has a couple good pass rushers like Nick Perry, Clay Matthews, maybe not quite as good as it was in his prime, but still a good pass rusher, Mike Daniels. So there's a lot of guys to worry about up front, and that's a 3-4 defense, which is another complicating factor.
And I know last week we talked to a lot of the O-line guys on the radio show while they were doing the turkey time for the O-line, and we talked about pass protection versus run blocking and how it's interesting that some games you can have one working and not the other, and you tend to think blocking is blocking and if they're having a good game. And, yes, of course, there are some differences, but it's interesting that it had seemed like you said that the pass protection had been pretty great and then the run game was really struggling to get going. And they talked about how much more technically sound in so many ways you have to be for the run blocking, which is interesting and kind of makes sense, but we don't address that a whole lot. And so that is another area where, again, if you're talking about having to bring in backups, that if you're having to be so technically sound in the run game, you know, your backups in theory are not going to be
in combination
in a different combination of it are maybe not going to be quite as sound there.
I'm saying technically sound in combination because I think what you're saying is, or what they were saying, and you're telling me, you know, run blocking is more aggressive. It's more taking the action to the other team. You're supposed to, every guy is supposed to be picking up a certain guy. Mm-hmm. And if you get everybody blocked, your running back probably just has to beat one guy. That's the plan on most running plays. Whereas pass blocking is obviously more reactionary. You immediately stand and go backwards, and you have to be good at moving your feet. But what you're trying to do is pick up who's coming, and stop them. You know, you probably have whoever's coming from this angle, that kind of thing. So it makes sense to me that a running play, the blocking on it would require more technically sound play.
Exactly.
And so that is something that could certainly be affected by lineup changes if they have to happen.
Which is interesting because it did seem a little bit like the running game was working at least a little bit better this Sunday than it has in the past when you did have a bunch of different combinations being used and injuries all over the place.
Yeah.
So that was sort of interesting to me that it seemed to disprove that idea a little bit. So what was it that you saw Sunday that you felt made the running game look like it was clicking at least a little bit better?
You know, it's hard to say. And the interesting part about it, and I have to credit Dirk Cutter with noticing this, I didn't notice it right away, is that we averaged 4.1 yards a carry. And usually that's a good average. I think their goal is more like 4.5. Mm-hmm. But still, 4.1 is pretty good, and it's better than we'd had in the last seven games. Mm-hmm. So it was a step forward. Usually when you do that, though, you got a couple 15, 20-yard runs sprinkled in there, so they balance out your two and three, because not every play is going to work. Sometimes you're going to get two or get lost, you know, get lost for one. Mm-hmm. We didn't. Ryan Fitzpatrick had an 11-yard run, and that they, you know, you can hardly count, and in the running game. And Doug Martin had a 10-yard run on the first drive, I think, but we didn't have any other runs more than that. So we were doing a good job of getting 4 yards, and I don't know if you can count on that happening again, but that's, I think, what was frustrating for the coaches, is that we were doing a good job of, on first down, of getting 4 or 5 or sometimes 8 yards, and still didn't convert third down. So we had 28 yards. We had 27 first downs, which ties for our team high, yet we're only 4 of 11 on third down. Some of that was because you were getting first downs on first down or on second down, but when we got to third down, it was a problem. And a perfect example of that was the key part of that game where Jacquizz Rodgers rushed for 8 yards on first down to get to the Atlanta 18 after the Brent Grimes fumble recovery, and the next three plays were an incompletion, a 1 yard pass, and then that fourth down play that was really where the game got away, where you had a chance and then you didn't.
And speaking of that play, what are the things you've heard? I know a lot of fans have had a lot of opinions on that, and so now that you've gotten to hear from Coach Cutter and some other people about it, what were your thoughts on what the team's goal and vision and view of that
was? Well, Coach Cutter said you in a situation, you know, you've got plays partitioned out on your play chart for certain situations, for lots of situations. That's why those cards are so big.
Yeah.
And he says for that sort of situation, fourth and one in that part of territory, you in that part of a game, you have 3 or 4 options that you've set aside. Now, you could obviously pull a play from another part of the chart, but to make decisions quickly, you give yourself like a little short list, right? And he says he probably should have picked a different play. That's his opinion after the game. Now, Ryan Fitzpatrick said he thought the play call was fine, and there were other options on that play. He says, I have to do a better job of decision-making. So you got two guys that are obviously willing to take the blame, which is good, but it's a little unclear as to, you know, was it a bad call? Or not bad, maybe, but maybe not the perfect choice. Or were there other issues? One thing on all three of those plays, the second down attempt at a double move to Deshaun, the short pass to Adam that only gained 1 yard on third and two, and then that last play, was there was a little more pressure on all of those plays. So Ryan Fitzpatrick was forced to throw the ball or make quicker decisions than he necessarily would have had to on a lot of other plays in that game. And maybe on that fourth down, had he had a little more time, he would have found somebody that was a little more open than Cam Brate.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, we still have two more segments coming up. One of those is getting to your Twitter questions. You can keep sending those in. Use that hashtag BucksLive. This is our only Buccaneers Insider Live of the week, so all those questions either about Atlanta or about the Packers, send them our way. Again, hashtag BucksLive. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Nobody's gonna let another man walk in their house and take something from them. So take that to heart. This is personal to me.
We call this the jungle. This our house today, man. Let's be great, man. Let's go. Let's get it in, man.
Be legendary today. Don't forget, this is our house. This is our house.
Now takes the snap, looks to his right, looking, crossing around, throw, caught ball, touchdown, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Hit the backdrop. It's a Lavonte David quarterback sack, his second of the game.
Let's make it count. We're past the 50, okay?
Big Winston looking. James is going to run to the left of the 10. He throws to the inside. Touchdown, Tampa Bay.
Attack, attacking, and takeaways. Got it?
It's picked off. Intercepted the 30, to the 25, to the 20. Quan Alexander will take it to the house. Touchdown, Tampa Bay.
Welcome back to Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Casey Phillips and Scott Smith here. We're going to have another segment after this one, getting to your Twitter questions. So you can keep sending those in. Use that hashtag BucksLive. All right, now I feel like we talked quite a bit about the Falcons game. Looking forward to the Packers game a little bit now. Overall, I think that it's really important, especially to address just the mental side of things now for the team of, A, when there's a lot of injuries, that's always challenging. And B, just knowing the mathematical probability is getting pretty slim here.
You can say it.
Getting pretty slim here for the playoffs. So what do you feel like the motivation can be for this game, this week, and the season, and trying to make sure that the team is still really on point when it goes to going to Green Bay?
You know, that question always comes up at this time of the season with any team that is in this situation. And it's understandable. In fact, that's basically how Coach Cutter addressed it yesterday when asked. He's like, yeah, it's human nature. It's something to be concerned about. I think, and certainly you can come up with examples of it going either way. As an example, I think in 2011, as the season was slipping away, the locker room kind of got lost a little bit. And, you know, the effort wasn't as good as you'd normally expect. But there have been other seasons that weren't, you know, they finished with a poor record, but really fought to the end, you know, and you see it happen. And I think when it goes right, it comes down to a few things. You need good leadership in your locker room. You need competitive guys, which most NFL players are, you know, and you just need somebody, you need people in there that keeps everybody working professionally. And I think that's the kind of team that we have. And
yeah, I can think of several guys that fit all of those.
Yeah. They care, you know. I think they still care very much. And so I agree, and I'm sure nobody in there has blinkers over their eyes. You know, run the table and get to 9-7, maybe you got a shot, but it's a long shot. I mean, Carolina has 8 wins. Atlanta has 7. You know, there's only 5 left, and there's some other teams, a group of other teams in between us and them. So many things would have to go right, and we'd have to win all of our games. So it's not a likely outcome. But until it's not there anymore, you keep trying, you keep fighting for it, right? And like I said, I think these guys have a lot of pride. I think there's still things to play for. As an example, if Jameis Winston comes back this week, which it looks like a possibility now, and we'll find out tomorrow, the idea there was he had some rehab work on Monday, and if he's not sore today, then they'll clear him to practice tomorrow. Since there's no media here, we're not going to really get an answer on that, what happened today, but we'll find out tomorrow. And if he comes back and plays the last 5 games, I think there's a lot of value in trying to get back into the offensive groove that he was in and that the team was in the first, like, 5 weeks of the season. I think that would be a very nice thing going into the offseason rather than just shutting him down.
That was going to be my next question, is the motivations for sitting him, playing him, and especially even taking into consideration Ryan Fitzpatrick and whether or not you bring him back. Do you need to see what Ryan Griffin can do? You've invested a lot of time and roster space in him. And just overall, the quarterback situation of if playoffs are looking like a long shot, the pros and cons of having Jameis in there, having either of the Ryans in there, and where you would stand on all that.
Well, you don't really, and I'm not saying you said this, but you don't really need to learn anything more about Ryan Fitzpatrick. You know what he is, and you've seen what he's done, which is exactly what they expected. So if there was any interest in bringing him back in the future, I think they already know what they got there. So you keep starting either Jameis or Ryan Fitzpatrick if Jameis can't play, because you're still concerned about winning football games. And even when a team has very little shot at the playoffs, coaches and players tend to still care very much about winning football games. And I think these coaches would want to do that. I think they would want to stick with Jameis, and if he's unavailable, Ryan Fitzpatrick. Yes, there's something to be said for getting a look at Ryan Griffin, but listening to coaches' comments when this period started with Jameis out about that issue, it sounded like they wouldn't mind that, but they're not going to force it. So it's not necessarily the priority. If the circumstances break right over the next 5 weeks, it could happen, but I don't think it's necessarily a priority.
Okay, and looking at the Packers, I think everyone would have thought that a Packers team without Aaron Rodgers would not have been something that you'd have to worry nearly as much about, and there were games that it looked like that was true, and they get shut out by the Ravens, and then all of a sudden this last Sunday night in primetime, they put up the second most points the Steelers have allowed all year, and looks like, again, another team that just happens to figure it out right in time to play us, which is so helpful.
Yeah. Well, it also just goes to show you, you can't predict anything in the NFL this season. I mean, you're right. After they got shut out at home by Baltimore, which I don't know the stat on it, but I'm guessing that's probably the first time that's happened in Lambeau in about a million years.
Yeah.
Somewhere around there. Maybe
A million and one, somewhere in there.
It didn't look good, did it? And Brett Hundley didn't look like he was the answer. But the thing about Brett Hundley is he is a talented guy. He's an athletic guy. And one thing he does well is similar to what Aaron Rodgers does well. Aaron Rodgers does everything well. But when Aaron Rodgers is incredibly dangerous is when he starts moving around and making and improvising and making throws on the run. I mean, he's probably the best in the league at that, right? You don't even have to see the stats. You can see it in your head, all the plays he's made through the years in that regard. Brett Hundley is actually better when he's doing that as well, moving around, improvising, making throws on the run. So I would suspect that what we have here, he's been in there four games now, I think, is him becoming more comfortable and more confident. And so it would make sense that he'd start to get better. You know, it was a pretty big jump from week 10 to week or week 11 to week 12. But still, I think you see a guy who's kind of putting it all together. Now, still, to go back to your very first words on this topic, it is much less of a challenge. Because it's not Aaron Rodgers,
right?
You know,
which you will always choose.
Yeah. So,
and I thought it was funny. I actually asked Brent Grimes this on the radio show last night: "Of are you happy to not be facing Aaron Rodgers, or are you going to say we want to beat
the best?"
Yeah. He was like, "People say that, but you always just want to win."
I always wondered about that,
and I loved his honesty about that. That he's like, "Yeah, I mean, of course, players say that because we always say we want to beat the best." He's like, "We just want to win. We don't really care why or how or whatever. Yeah. You know, everybody wants to play great, and you want to beat the best."
Yeah.
But you just kind of want to win.
Exactly. I mean, it only makes sense.
Which I thought was pretty funny. So looking at their offense with Brett Hundley in charge, is this a game that you see the Bucs defense being able to have a bit of a rebound game Atlanta?
And the Bucs need to take care of the top weapon on the other team better than they did in Atlanta. That's Devontae Adams is their best receiver. He's not Julio Jones. He's a very good receiver.
Very few people are.
He's not Julio Jones, but he is something to worry about. Since Brett Hundley came into the lineup for Aaron Rodgers, Jordy Nelson's numbers have fallen off the table. Reggie Cobb's numbers have been pretty low, but Devontae Adams is producing just as he always has been and maybe a little bit more, and that tells me that he's probably the most talented receiver they have. In fact, I described like in basketball terms, he's the one guy that can create his own shot on that offense, whereas Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb are awesome receivers, but they are made way better by Aaron Rodgers, whereas Brett Hundley seems to be relying a little more on Devontae Adams as he creates his own shot.
That's an interesting analogy. I like that a lot. Okay, we still have one more segment coming up, which is going to be getting to your Twitter questions. You can continue to send them in throughout this break we're going to take. You can also send them in next segment. Again, you got to use that hashtag BucsLive. That's what I'm going to search to find all those questions. Send those in while we take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Hey, hey, Tampa Bay, the Bucs know how to shine. Give a cheer for the Buccaneers. Give a cheer for the Buccaneers.
Hey, hey, Tampa Bay, the Bucs know how to shine.
Hey, hey, Tampa Bay, the Bucs know how to shine. Give a cheer for the Buccaneers.
Go Bucs!
Give a cheer for the Buccaneers.
Stand up.
Give a cheer for the Buccaneers.
Go Bucs!
Because we know we're on the top.
We stand up!
Welcome back into Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Casey Phillips and Scott Smith. It's time to get to your Twitter questions. You can keep sending those in. Use that hashtag BucsLive. Our first one comes from Doug. And first of all, this is one of our few shows that we've had since Twitter has expanded the character count. And I'm realizing I think this is going to be so helpful because there were times people were trying to ask questions that were longer and having to abbreviate a bunch of things, which made it hard for me to understand what they were always asking.
No, you can always count on a good question from this guy.
Exactly. And I can tell this is giving people some more space to explain their questions and stuff, which is cool. So he said that Anthony Auclair has been active the past couple games at the expense of Stalker. And when Coach Cutter was asked about Auclair's performance, his comments weren't exactly glowing. With the run game struggles and Stalker's reputation as a great blocker, help me understand the switch.
Okay. I think what it is okay, we're getting near the end of the season, right?
Yes.
Auclair is a guy that this team very much likes. They kept him as an undrafted free agent. They felt they actually said they would have considered drafting him in the seventh round before they realized they were going to get O.J. Howard, right? They thought they might use a late-round draft pick on him. When that didn't happen, they were very pleased to get him an undrafted free agency, and he proved to be what they thought he was, a very talented guy. He's a guy that has the talent set that suggests he could be the same type of tight end that O.J. Howard is. It's hard to find that can be a pass rushing threat and a guy who can block very well. Okay, so you're right. Auclair in the last two games has replaced Stalker, and I think that's because they believe he can fill that role as well, and they really want to get a look at him. And I don't think you can pin the run game struggles on your third tight end. Yeah, Luke Stalker is known as a very good blocker, but going from Stalker to Auclair is not the reason why the run game isn't working. And they want to get a chance to look at him. And I think you're going to see more of that.
Okay.
I think you're going to see him playing even more. You know, Coach did say that he was less familiar when he arrived here with the blocking side of the game. So there is more of a learning curve for him there. And that's what they're asking him mostly to do right now. I mean, he's played a decent number of snaps the last two games, but hasn't really been targeted with any passes. I'm not sure how many routes he's even run. So that's what they're asking him to do right now and play a little fullback. And, you know, I would say it's a work in progress, but
I'm just so impressed with his ability in general to do it, because you hear play calls and you see playbooks and everything and how complicated they are just for us to hear. Imagine doing it in a second language. Like, what? I mean, I imagine these long play calls that are all in English.
Yeah.
And so it's almost like he's probably having to translate that. Like, he seems to be doing great with it. I just imagine for me that sounds...
Yeah, you're just memorizing words.
Yeah, well, I struggle with that in my own language. Okay, Simba has a question about... He said, this is not the first time an opponent's star wide receiver has hurt us. Why not have our best corner shadow the best wide receiver?
That is something that somebody asked Dirk Cutter on Monday. He said, yeah, that's something you can do. and that was about the end of it. So I don't really know the reason why the Buccaneers choose not to do that. I really think that's not nearly as common as people think it is. We've faced a couple teams this year have done that, but we faced other teams that, you know, we have Mike Evans, who's clearly a threat, and they haven't shadowed him. Looking at Green Bay, they don't generally have one guy shadow the other team's top receiver. It's just not something that that a lot of teams do. It's you either choose to do it or you don't. We choose to stay on our sides. Now think about when Julio Jones is torching you in every possible way in that game. Your attempts to switch things up and fix it are changing, employing different types of coverage. But if you change your entire approach going into the game, you weren't going to shadow him with, say, Brent Grimes. And now in the middle of the game, you decide, okay, we're going to shadow him with Brent Grimes. Think about how much different that makes everything, because now Ryan Smith has to be constantly switching around, and that was not something you prepared for. So switching to from not shadowing to shadowing in the middle of the game is a lot more complicated than trying different types of coverages.
That's true. That's a great point. The Jimenez family wants to know, is there a reason we keep running a zone on third and long? Would maybe a three-man line with six in shallow coverage work a little bit better with two safeties?
I think they tried that.
Yeah. I think when he said they tried something like 14 different things.
Two safeties are generally called too high, and I know we've had three down linemen generally that we've paired that with Kendall Beckwith rushing the ball. What he's basically talking about there is sort of like cloud coverage, and I do remember hearing Dirk Cutter say those words after the game, so I'm pretty sure that was attempted.
That was an attempt. All right, they also had another question, and I'm really glad they asked this, so that we were wanting to get to it anyways, but they said, looking at the first list of Hall of Fame this year, and I see the three different Bucks who made it, Rondé is first ballot, but what do you think are the chances on the other two?
Question came in a couple of days ago, and I'm glad it did. Our last show was Tuesday afternoon, and this announcement was made Tuesday night, so their first chance.
How dare they not consider
it.
Our show whenever right. They made this announcement?
So we found out that all three of our guys who were preliminary candidates, Rondé Barber, John Lynch, and Simeon Rice, made it through to the semifinalists. I found two of those not to be surprising at all. John Lynch has been a finalist for four straight years and a semifinalist for five straight years, so it would have been surprising to see him slide back. And Rondé Barber, to me, has fantastic credentials. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they agree. The surprise was Simeon Rice, because 2 years ago, there was the oversight for 3 years running of he wasn't even included in the original list of candidates, which is ridiculous given his credentials. So we got that taken care of, and then we've really been, I'm not saying we're the reason, but we've really been making a push for Simeon, and now this year he makes the leap to semifinals when he didn't last year. So that's an awesome step forward for him. Will it translate into making the next step to the finalists? That's a big jump in 1 year, and I hope so, but I would be a little bit surprised, because if you look at the names of the 27 finalists, it's supposed to be 25, but there were some ties in the voting. There's a lot of guys in there. I'll give you one example, Leslie O'Neal, defensive end for the Chargers, and Simeon Rice are the top two guys on the career sack list who are Hall eligible who are not in the Hall yet, but truthfully, Leslie O'Neal has 10 more sacks. So they're both extremely deserving candidates, but they're probably going to be taking votes away from each other.
That's an interesting point.
Yeah, it makes me wonder if either of them will make the jump this year or not. I would like to see it happen, but we'll see. As for John Lynch, he's been a finalist for four straight years, so it would be strange to see him not at least make that list again. He's the only finalist of the 17 in 2014 who has not subsequently made it into the Hall. So I'm hoping this is the year. I think the Hall voters tend to like – you know, progress guys along, and eventually they get in, and that could happen with John. Rondé, I personally think, has the best credentials, because you can say a lot without even using the numbers of his impact, but then you can lay these awesome numbers on top of it, just incredible stuff. The 45 interception, 25 sack, he's the only guy, all the starts. He has an enormous amount of tackles, which people don't take into account for a cornerback, like maybe fourth in the history of the league, that kind of stuff. I think Rondé makes it through to the semifinalists this year, but unlike them, I don't think that he is a first ballot lock.
Really?
Yeah, and I think he is a first ballot Hall of Famer. Let me make that clear.
I believe
Barber is a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Yes.
I don't think that's a lock, though, because you hear arguments against him, like, and they're dumb arguments, like he's a system cornerback and stuff like that.
Right.
He seems like the kind of guy that the voters will put in, but maybe not the first year on a crowded ballot with guys like Ray Lewis and Randy Moss and Terrell Owens still sitting there. I hope I'm wrong, because he deserves it, but it makes me worried.
Interesting. And you did put out the one tweet that I really liked about Simeon Rice and the sacks.
Hall of Fame voters, and I have to do this quickly, Hall of Fame voters like to see sustained success. That's why it took Terrell Davis so long to get in, because he was fantastic, but not for very long. Simeon Rice was the best pass rusher for almost an entire decade in the NFL with 101 sacks in an eight-year span. How is that not exactly what they're looking for?
That's
the best player at his position for almost a decade.
There we go. I like it. There's the case we can make right now. Thanks for joining us on Buccaneers Insider Live. We'll see you next time.